Well, morning, everyone. This is a bit of a departure from the normal, isn't it? Goodness me. Anyway, most of you, I think, know who we are, but for those of you that don't, we are Andrew and Claire Head. This one's Andrew, I'm Claire. And we farm organically over the hill at Rempston. So we just thought to set the scene, really. Who are we to talk to you about sustainable food? So a little bit of background for you, those of you that don't know us. So when we met at school, and then eventually Andrew went off to study agriculture at college, and then we got married and we went travelling and farmed in Australia and New Zealand for a short period of time. And then we returned to England, much to our parents' relief, and took a job on a dairy farm, a conventional dairy farm in Kent, and we were there nearly a year, but quite soon we took a job up in Staffordshire, running a 2.5 that Andrew went to run the deer herd on a 2,500-acre farm. But soon after we'd been there a while, a couple of years, he ended up managing the farm, and it was owned by JCB, and it had cattle, sheep, red deer, and arable. And as soon as he took over, he was asked by the owner at the time, Sir Anthony Bamford, now Lord Bamford, of course, to convert it to organic, which he duly did. And he learnt a lot along the way, and so did I, by osmosis. We seem to talk about farming a lot at home, which is all good. And he set up the poultry, the egg-laying, the veg-growing enterprises on top of all the other enterprises, and doubled the red deer herd. And he mixed with the great and the good of the organic world, and as far as I'm concerned, he was one of them. He was really quite splendid. But we didn't forget our dream. When we were 18, we'd always wanted our own farming business. And to cut a really, really long story short, by a number of miracles of God, we ended up with our tenancy here in the Purbeck. This has been a whole new learning curve for us, but we have had the blessing of you, our gorgeous All Saints family, to help us and carry us through it. Well, that's a different story, not for today's talk. We have got laying hens, beef and sheep, and we've also had pigs and meat bird enterprises. So now you know, we have spent all our working lives in agriculture and 25 of those in the organic sector. So we were newcomers to the industry. Neither of our families were in farming. So we had no preconceived ideas about it. So our choices have been made along the way, the decisions we've made and the routes we've chosen to follow. And we've learnt a lot and continue to every single day. So our plan today is to hopefully share some of that knowledge with you and to give you some honest information in the hope that it will help enable you to make informed choices with your food purchases. So are we moving on the doobries here? So Bible, this is good, isn't it? Clicker that works. Okay, this is good. This is good, right? Bible references. So of course, Psalm 8, which was the reading we asked to be read, it just explains the whole thing, doesn't it, really? We understand that we're supposed to respect the animals, the planet, the soil, and the plants, and treat everything kindly, and they were given to our care as a gift from God. And a couple of verses that we also appreciate are these two. I'm sorry if it's really small. I've never done a PowerPoint before, and I've realised I should have checked in about font size. There's a couple of verses. This one, God, Genesis 9, verse 3, after the flood, God said to Noah, "Everything that lives and moves about will be food for you. Just as I gave you the green plants, I now give you everything." That is some gift. But we also learn in Revelation 11, verse 18, that we are going to be held to account. The time has come for judging the dead and for rewarding your servants, the prophets, and your people who revere your name, both great and small, and for destroying those who destroy the earth. So I'm thinking we shouldn't be destroying the earth. So something we all have in common, eating. We all need a farmer three times a day. Well, we do in this country. We're privileged, aren't we, in this country, because we can eat three times a day. And this one is a particularly lovely farmer, pictured here with our puppy at the time, Angus. Pardon?
Only last year.
Only last year, indeed. Yeah, he's now a huge dog. This is a massive subject that we've spent, as you've just heard, our entire working lives working in, and it's been really hard to decant it down into what we think is important, the crucial points that you might be interested in or that might help you make these choices. So we've just done a tiny bit of this. People do degrees in this stuff, you know, and we've got 10 minutes to let you know what we think, although I think we're a bit longer than that, sorry. So one of the main points that we want to make today is that we have power as consumers. The sustainability of your food is 100% dependent on the farming system that you buy into with every single purchase. So we're going to expand on that. And first of all, I'm going to hand over to Andrew.
Right, so agriculture, yes, is one of the biggest influences on the environment and climate. I think it's been estimated that the emissions that go into the atmosphere of CO2 and other things that help create greenhouse gases, agriculture is somewhere about 25% in total. I mean, those figures sort of vary up and down. But it is a big influencer on the environment and therefore the climate. But one thing I wanted to talk about, which I think is really important, is also biodiversity. Now, biodiversity is a buzzword at the moment. I think this is where a lot of the Extinction Rebellion stuff is coming from at the moment. Biodiversity, the definition of biodiversity is the variety of life on the planet. But I'd like to go a little bit further than that. Biodiversity is this. So this is from Genesis 1. And God said, "Let the water teem with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the vault of the sky." So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living thing in which the water teems and that moves in it, about in it, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and increase in number, and fill the water in the seas, and let the birds increase on earth." And there was evening, and there was morning, the fifth day. And God said, "Let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, the livestock, the creatures that move along the ground, and the wild animals, each according to its kind." And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Now, to me, that's what that's biodiversity. And biodiversity is the variety of life. We have the variety of living things in the soil. We have the variety of how bodies are made up. We have communities of animals. And we have, and the other extreme would be whole ecosystems. The whole of the sort of Amazon rainforest is an ecosystem itself. And that is what biodiversity is. Sustainable food is food that is grown under systems that protect biodiversity or even improve biodiversity. Now, we as humans, we absolutely need and rely on biodiversity. And as consumers, we have the power to impact this. So these are sort of main points that we want to try and make today.
So we're also very conscious of the fact that in the media, we're actually bombarded, particularly at the moment, especially with Extinction Rebellion and all that's going on. There's just so much in the press about food and food production and what we should and shouldn't eat. And, you know, it's guilt-ridden, it's uncomfortable. And what I'm struggling with is that it's very conflicting. The headlines misinterpret single-minded scientific studies. We've had that this week. We've got militant veganism. And we've got false and, frankly, uninterrogated, often frightening information being thrown at us from all over the media, and as farmers we're completely trolled as being, you know, the worst thing ever, and it's pretty endless, really. So we thought we'd just try and simplify the way farming, the farming systems that we have in this country, and there's basically three farming systems to tell you about, and Andrew's going to do that. And each system cannot be defined by one part of it. It's made up of many parts, and what no one part defines whether it's sustainable. So, for example, if you've got animals, you have to consider where their feed is coming from, what their rearing system is, how much medical care they need, and what the end product's nutritional value is, because all the different systems produce different qualities of food. And veg and fruit and grains are heavily impacted by sprays and chemicals, which impact soil health. And then, of course, we've got agricultural workers and their welfare. So there's many different things to consider. I know that's been in the news this week regarding Lidl and the Colombian workers. And it's really important, I think, as Christians, that we see this holistically and understand that there is much more to your bag of peas than you might think. So I'm going to hand over to Farmer Head now. He's going to talk about the three types of farming.
So three types of farming, simply. We would start off with the factory or intensive farming systems. We've got conventional agriculture, and then we have agroecological or regenerative farming systems, and that's what organic would fit into that system. So sort of from the top there. Intensive farming. These are the systems that would involve a lot of indoor stuff. So we'd be looking at battery chickens. For eggs, battery systems would keep them in confined cages, this sort of thing, for egg production. We would have intensive broilers for chicken meat production. That picture on the right shows a broiler house, a big house full of chickens that are produced. They go in there as small chicks. All the food is bought into them and the water is right there for them, and they grow, probably don't move around very much, never go outside, and that's how an intensive broiler house would look and how chicken meat would be produced in an intensive situation. We also have indoor pig systems, which would involve the sows being in farrowing crates often, and then pigs would be finished. Everything happens on concrete there, so again, it's all an indoor intensive system. All the food is bought into them. We have beef lots. That's a fairly extreme picture on the left-hand side, an American beef lot. Big pens, thousands of cattle all together. Again, all the feed is bought into them. There's no grazing going on there. So all of the food that they would eat would be produced somewhere else. Across the nation, and then so they would be, a lot of these crops would be irrigated, so using a lot of water, so that those crops would then be brought in and laid in front of the cattle to eat, so to grow beef. We have mega dairies where thousands of cattle are kept inside on concrete, what you'd call zero grazed. Everything's bought into them. So that's the sort of intensive side of it. Then I moved on to conventional agriculture. Now, that's what I suppose we would perhaps refer to as fairly normal agriculture, post-war modern farming, where most of our food is coming from, in fact. But it is heavily reliant on nitrogen, chemical fertilizer, and pesticide use. This is a lovely picture of a tractor through a green field, but obviously you can see what's happened. He's spraying the field. So what's happened over the last 50 years, these technologies have developed. We've got fertilizer that feeds crops, but also chemical fertilizer has been getting in the soil, and it depletes the soil. It can deplete soil life. Again, sprays, that sort of thing. If they're overused, can build up resistance. They use it for weed killers, that sort of thing. It can kill the soil life. When these technologies were sort of developed in the last 50 years, a lot less was known about the complexity of the soils. But now we know a lot more about that, and the complexity of soil is basically biodiversity. That's what we're talking about, the variety of life, and how important that is, and how everything reacts together. So that's how... That's our conventional agriculture there. There's also a lot now that is biased towards GM technology. And there's really no sort of big focus on sort of soil health improvements in that side of farming. And then we have the third type, which arguably is where we're saying that the most sustainable food is coming from, and that is the agroecological regenerative farming systems, where we would be trying to work with nature for all these sort of processes and biological processes. So we're using crops to build fertility. We're putting legumes in. This is off our farm. This is a crop we put in for finishing lambs on. So it's clover, chicory, plantains, and a whole load of other herbs that have gone into that, as well as some grasses. So we're working with nitrogen to grow this. No chemicals will go onto that. Typically, normally in these farming systems, it would be forage based. You wouldn't be feeding lots of crops to the to livestock for the meat. In this situation as well, the soils would be capturing carbon, so your soil carbon levels would be building up. Soil health would be maintained or improved. Soil structures would be better. Other things to mention in the agroecological would be agroforestry. So trees would be, there's a move now, particularly in Europe, well, actually across the whole world, China are doing it, North America, planting trees in the agricultural fields for the shelter, for the benefits of the crops and the animals. So a really good thing. And then the products you can get from the trees. And also in these kind of farming systems, there would be often sort of specific work to help nature and help environment and that sort of thing. So just going back to this then, we reckon that the sustainability, this talks about sustainable eating. So the sustainability of your food directly relates to the farming system that you buy into.
So we thought we'd have some examples of the types of food and just talk about that. So one of the most demonised foods lately has been red meat. You know, we mustn't eat red meat, it's destroying the planet and so on. Eat less meat and dairy, or better still, go vegan. No, veganism is not going to save the planet. I'm sorry, it's not. That is a very misguided statement. We need to concentrate on using the right meats and the right farming systems. So now Andrew's going to tell us, because not all meat is equal, isn't that right? Not all meat is equal. So you can't say beef is not the same as our grass-fed beef up the road. Completely different product.
Right picture. Is that the right picture?
Could be.
We'll go with that picture. So I suppose the background to this is that we have a climate change. We've got a climate situation going on where we've got greenhouse gases going into the atmosphere, which is increasing global warming, which is the big problem, causing climate change, causing these weather problems around the world. The greenhouse gases that are going into the atmosphere are CO2, which are coming from burning fossil. A lot is coming from burning fossil fuels and other things as well. And then the other big one that's coming into going to the atmosphere is methane. So I want to talk about methane. So methane is perceived as an agricultural issue. Cattle and sheep are ruminants, so they are converting grass into something that we can eat, milk and meat. So we can eat those things. We can't eat grass because we can't digest it. So the ruminants do it for us. So in the process of being a ruminant, these animals produce methane, which they burp out. Belch out, not fart. They burp it out.
Just point of interest, Dan insisted we made that clear.
Yeah. Methane being its greenhouse gas. So it's perceived and it's been talked about a lot that if we reduce the number of ruminants on the planet, we will save the planet from global warming because we will be reducing the amount of methane in the world contributing to that. So there's a few points here we'd like to make. Is that the methane emissions from cattle that are fed a lot of grains from these kind of intensive systems, the methane is a lot greater that comes out of those cattle. The systems are all messed up. So what we need to do is have cattle that are grass-fed. It's a much more natural system for them. The methane levels are less from grass-fed systems. The other thing to note is that methane is a powerful greenhouse gas in the atmosphere, but it has a short lifespan. It has a maximum lifespan of 10 years. Before it's broken down into other things and is reduced. So the level of methane in the atmosphere that is a result of the cattle is not increasing because the one generation of cattle produces their methane and then they die off or they're used up within 10 years and then more cattle come in. So the level of cattle is staying the same. So the level of methane from that is staying the same. I'll come on to another quote that sort of verifies that. But really, we shouldn't worry about the cattle methane levels. The methane is coming from other sources, from the ice that's melting and from under the sea and that kind of thing. So regenerative and agroecological agriculture is predominantly pasture-fed. So, and in fact, what's happening there is soil carbon levels are getting built up, which is offsetting the amount of carbon that's in the atmosphere. So we should be looking at foods that build up soil carbon rather than deplete it. So yeah, it might come as a bit of a surprise then, because what we are hearing a lot of in the news as well, that we should eat more chicken and eggs and pork, chicken and pork really as our meats. But actually, it would be right to say that more emissions are coming from those intensive systems than they are from the grass-fed systems. So this is just this is not great news reporting. We were going to show you I was going to put a slide up of intensive pig and poultry, but we knew there'd be some children in the room, and we thought this is really not great. I mean, if you go, just go and look at it for yourself, but it's horrible. So the other thing to mention about intensive systems is the welfare of livestock. These are animals sort of tightly packed in their environments, and they breathe all over each other, and respiratory disease is a real problem in pig and poultry. So what do? We give them antibiotics. So there's a lot of antibiotics going into these systems, and the WHO, World Health Authority organization, has cited this as a big issue for us with antibiotic resistance in humans. So, you know, it's just not a sustainable way forward that we're treating animals in that way. Other sort of intensification issues, you know, the energy that is used for the heating and the lighting. GM feed is a major thing that is bought into these systems for the proteins. And this is coming from a lot. The GM crops are grown in South America, where they're depleting the rainforest to grow the crops. So it's taking away biodiversity there, reducing the amount of carbon that's that's been locked up in those sort of things. These ecosystems, everything works together, and we're destroying that. We're destroying what God has set up. These meats are cheap foods as well. Cheap meat is not really cheap. Something is paying for it. The animals or the planet is paying for it. Let's have that one. It's a nice picture. So organically inspected. So the organic meat is more expensive, but it's probably a fairer price than it should. The price that it is the right price, considering the production system. So we had a quote earlier about eating less meat, but what we're saying is that we should eat less meat, but better meat. Now, grass-fed beef and lamb, that's what we should be searching out. Not pork and chicken three times a day, which, you know, is so many people are doing that kind of thing. It's the wrong thing that we've been focusing on, and sort of a lot of information, misinformation. I had a little adage that when we started sort of doing a lot of meat work ourselves, one of our principles was that if you were going to rear an animal, take its life for food, that you should respect that animal in life and in death, and then use every single part of that animal that you could. So, you know, nose to tail kind of philosophy. Use everything. You don't want to be chucking bits away, because it's a waste of that life, and it's a waste of resources that's gone into it. Now, I would say that we should add to that now that animals that you eat for food, somehow along the line, you should have considered, has it contributed to the environment, or has it actually contributed to the destroying the environment? So it's just a sort of principle that I'd like to look at, really, is how has this animal, is this food that we're eating, benefited the environment, or actually is it seriously damaging to the environment? This little quote here was a recent one that we were sort of directed to, 15th of October 2019, so only a few days ago. BVA is a British Veterinary Association, have written a report on their position on this, and I just quoted this one. Cattle and sheep are not the enemy. Instead, it's the high-yielding, high-concentrate maize, soy, cereal production systems which are driving humanity towards the precipice. Benefits under the new GWP report, Global Warming Potential Report are gained through well-managed grass-based agriculture by a diverse patchwork of rural businesses and the restoration and maintenance of rural economies. We can still eat meat and dairy as part of a new era of diet that includes greater nutritional diversity but also restores natural balances in all farmland.
So that's all the scientific stuff that we're squeezing into this talk. Obviously, there's so much more, really, and it's so much deeper than that. But I hope it gives you an idea and a bit of an outline of what we're getting at. Do ask Andrew questions at the end. We'll be hanging around for coffee, I promise. So we thought we'd move on to a few points of how we can be more sustainable in our food choices. One of the major issues is, so this is where it's totally tiny and is testing your eyesight, sorry. So food waste, just don't waste food. So much of the food we grow is then thrown in the bin across the world globally. It is such an issue, of course. It's a massive issue for catering establishments, but also in private homes. And you can't help wondering that actually it's just not valued. Cheap food is a great idea, but actually, if it's so cheap that no one gives monkeys about it, then they're just chucking it in the bin. And all those resources, it's not just the waste of the moment, it's all the resources that have been wasted that produce that food. It's what I mean, it's just so much around everything that you can think about. So we should perhaps try to treat food with greater respect. Yeah, do.
So if agriculture is producing emissions, and this much is agriculture's emissions, and then we eat this much food, and this much food is wasted, and this is varying from sort of like people quote figures like 20-30% of food is wasted. This much food is wasted at the end. Well, this is your emissions. This much of the emissions of food is a complete waste of time anyway. So we're destroying the planet for no reason at all if we waste all that food.
So it's a no-no then. So the other point is to just be aware, really, of food labelling, which is unclear and misleading. We've all heard about the fluffy farms from some supermarkets that don't even exist. You know, they'll be reared in those pictures we saw earlier of hens in those sheds. It's not... Just be aware that there is a lot of misinformation out there. And please don't take news articles at face value. It is always more complicated. And just a note, really, non-organic fruit and veg and grains are sprayed. And if you know, we have certification for organics to say we don't. There's no if it doesn't have certification to say it isn't sprayed, then it will be, without a doubt. And it won't be sprayed once. It will be sprayed a number of times. And what frightens me a little bit, to be truthful, is the fact that actually, although these individual chemicals have been tested for safety on humans, they have not been tested as a cocktail effect. There is not a lot of research going into this. Because actually, the chemical companies who fund most research, it doesn't suit them for this to come out against them. So that's a deeply cynical sort of statement, but it's how I feel after all these years. And the other thing that I really have a problem with is processed food. It's sold as, you know, convenient and cheap and healthy. Well, it's not. It's usually made with unsustainable, cheap ingredients. It's poor quality and it's very poor value for money. Do we all remember the Horsegate scandal with the burgers? There just isn't much nutrition in that cheap meat. It is, well, they were barely meat, but it is a worry. And I worry for the people who don't have much money, actually, because they are being conned and that is an issue for their health. And that really scares me. But you see, food companies make a fortune out of these cheap products because their margins are so great. So the other issue is bread is another processed food. So conventionally grown wheat is all sprayed 6 weeks before harvest. So one of the major issues with all these antibiotics and sprays is the residuals. They are known and tested, and they are known to be, we are eating them. So that is something to think about. And to decide, you know, how much it matters to you. This is very anecdotal, but I think there is quite a clear line between the increase in food allergies and food issues and the increase in illnesses with alongside processed and chemically produced food. It's it's not scientifically proven, but who's going to do that? I think we've got an anecdotal evidence of that personally. So we understand that for a lot of people, this is a lot of information. It can be really overwhelming. And also, there are issues about the price of organic food. And I know that this is not a choice. These aren't choices that everyone can make. And I get that. And I think we're just offering this to suggest that to help you make food choices, not to tell you you should do one thing or the other. So if maybe you're not into organic, or you can think, I just don't want to do the whole thing, maybe just change one small part of your diet to organic, maybe dairy or, you know, the vegetables or whatever it is. Because the other side of it is if you decide that organic's one step too far and you just don't want to entertain it, then another thing you can do is just buy British as far as you can, because actually British farmers have some of the highest welfare in the world, and they are regulated with their chemical use and so on. And of course we do have great protection for our workers, notwithstanding obviously we have slavery issues in some areas of farming, but generally speaking Aaron, who works for us, is protected by all sorts of laws, and that's a great thing. And so and that's something that they don't have in other countries, including across Europe, where a lot of the huge vegetable farms are and so on. It is a worry. So if you can buy British where you can, that is a good start too. And I have to say, just because something is local doesn't mean it's good. It does. We're back to the farming system. How are they grown locally? I think we're pretty fortunate around here because it's nearly all outside reared. Although the farmer on our farm before, he reared a lot of his lambs indoors and they didn't go outside. So you never really know. What you need to know your farmer, don't you? That's the thing. So that's it. That you've not clicked on for me. There you go. That's right. Cheap food. It's always paid for somewhere, either by animals, humans, or the planet. There is no such thing as a free lunch. So just so that you know, do you want to do this bit?
So we just wanted to refer you to a couple of references if anybody wanted to know where a lot of information, good information comes from. Agricology is a website that was set up sharing information to farmers for different systems, which is a really good website. Soil Association's kind of across the board as well, for consumers as well. Sustainable Food Trust has got a lot of information on it, sort of myth-busting stuff and the real info. Organic Research Centre is similar to Soil Association in terms of its sort of use for farmers. And then the Soil Food Web from Elaine Ingham is all about the complexities of soil life and how everything interacts with everything else. So we thought if you wanted to look at those, we can refer you to them again. But we'll move on to the conclusion.
Yes. So you're pleased to know this is the conclusion. You can all wake up now. So finally, with all this information overwhelming, maybe making you feel a bit sad or confused, and for which I am very sorry if that is the case. That was not the idea. We're hoping to clear up a few issues. I just think we need to remember, actually, that we've been given all this food by God. And as I said earlier, in this country, we have a bountiful amount of food. And the Bible tells us to enjoy our food together. They followed a daily discipline of worship in the temple, followed by meals at home. Every meal a celebration, exuberant and joyful as they praised God. People in general liked what they saw. Every day their number grew as God added to those who were saved. Food is a great way to connect to each other and to other people. And it can help. We can use food to help them to introduce other people to Jesus. And that is a tremendous blessing. So that is why we do Farm Church, and that is why on our little egg box, this is shameless advertising. In 12 years, I haven't done this. We've got on our little egg box, we've got that verse quoted as every meal a celebration on our egg box. So please enjoy your food and don't get stressed about it. If you have any questions, do ask us. God bless.